I've been having fun opening sermons with a song. I'm inviting you to sing into the sermon with me. And as I was reflecting on this text, which is about blessing, a song just came to my mind, which is a beautiful song. The rendition I think of most is from Sufjan Stevens' Christmas album. And the song I gave you the first verse of in the little handout, Come Thou Font of Every Blessing. And so I'm going to play it, plucking it out. I have just started learning mandolin. This is my grandpa Sharon's mandolin that I got last summer and fixed up so that I could play it. So, and you know, Sufjan Stevens is like banjo, so it's like in the sort of family of sounds, but this is not his version. But I'll play the tune through and then invite you to sing along. And you'll have to, I'll just pause before I go into the second time around when I want you to sing, and I'll start singing with you, but I'm at that level of expertise where I can't coordinate singing and playing at the same time. So y'all sing and I'll play. St. Lydia's does as a congregation. And I think we do right now in the world. And so in the midst of struggle and challenge personally, and especially as a congregation, and the exhaustion that comes from that when it's persistent, when it's over time, blessing breaks in this text. And I wanted to dwell for a couple of minutes about how we find our way into the surprise of blessing that we weren't even sure was there. And then investigate some how this text really speaks exactly to that, to unexpected but really powerful presence of blessing with us and for us. So I want to start just by reflecting on a trip out to Brooklyn Gardens to visit Eula, who's one of our congregants who lives there. And this is like a Monday last week, maybe Sunday or Monday, so a week ago, and I got off the subway and I was walking down the street toward the entry. And you know how as you're walking along, there are those cut out sections of the sidewalk where there's just dirt or like somebody's chopped up Christmas tree or whatever that's around the tree. And I'm just walking along and noticing things, non-judgmentally. And I stopped all of a sudden because I saw in this one little square of dirt these like shoots of daffodil that were up about 4 or 5 inches. And I was like, wait. Yes. I was like, wait, like wrong timing. Like, you went down. This is January. It wasn't February yet. So I paused and just looked at them for a minute and sort of took in the fact that they were perking up and remembered other years when like it snowed on the daffodils and they were fine. They still kept growing up and eventually bloomed. And I took a picture of them. So it really sort of made me, it literally made me stop and ponder this moment like this, where are we in the year? And what does that say, that daffodil popping up when all around it is just kind of the brown yuck of winter? Like there hasn't been very much snow, but there's this just kind of grunginess to when the snow melts and there's just stuff there. No one's really gone out and cleaned up their yards and stuff like they do later in the spring. And it occurred to me that this weekend, not in the Christian tradition, but in Celtic tradition and some other pre-Christian European markings of time, is the festival of Imlek, which is halfway in between the winter solstice and the spring equinox.
Mm.
And a lot of the Christian calendar is built on the cycles of seasons. You know, Easter is movable because of the way Passover is movable, which is related to the cycles of the moon. And we have the feast of John the Baptist, which is at the summer solstice, when the days start to shorten because he was meant to be the one who points to Christ. And Jesus' birth is at the winter solstice, when the days begin to lengthen and the light returns to symbolize he's the light of the world. So even like the two hinges of the year with John the Baptist and Jesus are placed on these turnings of the year in terms of how life on this planet works, how life in this universe works. And there's lots more examples of that. And so I was thinking to myself, what interesting, what is this festival, the first and second of February? And the insight that the word itself is a Gaelic word that means in the valley or dwelling in the belly, and it's a word about sheep, about ewes having a lamb inside.
Mm.
And you know, sort of this anticipation of the lambing season, but it's not there yet, but it's happening, that growth and development is happening inside. And also this image of what's happening under the ground as winter begins to wane. And even though you can't see the signs of spring yet, or at least they're just the very most modest signs of spring, this preparation and beginning to open has been happening underground in the dark of the earth. And that's what was happening with these daffodil bulbs, apparently, without us knowing. And so I was thinking about that as a season that we're in. That, let's be honest, like the Trump administration is exhausting, just the constant crazy. And the for many people, like the sort of durability of personal struggles that you just think, you know, am I ever going to get past this? It's exhausting. And I think about the story of this congregation, what you and as I joined you, what I've been holding, grappling with, is exhausting. Like, are we going to, when's the new season? And this festival that is marked at this moment in the year is a claim that there's this deeper turning at work, preparing for a season that's coming. And in that is the promise of blessing. And it's meant especially, I think, for people in a winter season. It's meant for people who are in a place where it's hard to see the presence of blessing, where it just looks bleak. And so that's a really powerful material reality to what's happening with the earth right now. And it made me reflect in a particular way on this text, which is, in a sense, Matthew's sort of exposition of how Jesus interprets scripture. It's like his Torah interpretation as a Jewish leader for the followers of Jesus in this early Christian Jewish community. And Matthew does it in a particular way. Mark doesn't have any of this in his gospel. And in Luke's gospel, he has four blessings and then four woes. So Matthew's the only one who has this whole sort of litany. And every single one, as we've talked about other weeks, he's very interested in tying it back to the witness of the Hebrew scriptures. It's the scriptures his community knew. And he wanted, when he was depicting Jesus' ministry, to highlight the ways in which Jesus himself was always referencing the Psalms, always referencing the prophets, and in some ways just talking out of Hebrew scriptures. And so I won't go through every one of them, but it's really important that Jesus is taking the whole of the Jewish teaching and in a sense summarizing it here as the way in which God is present blessing. And there's one word, which is really a summary of all of them, which in Hebrew is anawim, which means the poor in spirit are the little ones, the meek ones, the ones who are on the margins, the ones who are suffering. And it embodies a whole sort of preferential option for the hurting, for those who are on the margins, the sojourner, the widow and the orphan, the person who's outcast, who's sick. You know, it just embodies this Old Testament, this Hebrew scriptures focus that God's care is especially here for those who don't feel like there is any presence or blessing for them. And so then that's this revealing, it's this epiphany text for us about who is Jesus, what's at the heart of his understanding of his mission and how he understands God. What is God up to? Who is God present to and blessing? And I was thinking about, in particular, the way in which time is characterized in the Greek language. And crisis is one version of how the Greeks talked about time. Crisis being a moment, obviously, we use that word too, like a time when something really significant is at stake and there's danger and threat. And epiphany is a time when something's being opened, when something's being revealed. And that's the season we're in now. And then another understanding of time is kairos, which is like this opportune time, when there's a time to grasp hold of something good that just, almost like a tipping point, if you will, a sort of holy moment of opportunity to grasp hold of. And so, this epiphany time really is a time for us to, in a sense, listen and receive the gift of this truth about how God chooses to be present with and for us, which is in this kind of blessing and blessing of especially those places in us, in our midst, that feel wintry, that feel broken, that feels set aside. And those people we know and those people that we meet who are in that position, that's God's disposition to them. And we're invited as body of Christ in a way to share that receiving of that gift and also that disposition as we live. I was reading a poet who writes a lot of beautiful blessings in this book, which is called To Bless the Space Between Us, a Book of Blessings, John McGonagall. He was an Irish priest and poet and philosopher and spiritual writer. And it's this kind of contemporary writing of blessing that I think I want to invite our recovery of, blessing one another, being blessings to one another. When we know that there's so many experiences that we have of subtle and not so subtle disregard. And it just, the more socially marginalized you are, the more likely it is that you experience that again and again and again every day. And that's not us, that's not our identity. It's been given to us or revealed among us that we're a blessed people and a blessing people. And so, just to close, I wanted to read this blessing for one who is exhausted as a way to acknowledge the ways in which many of us have been exhausted, and in a certain way, this community of St. Lydia's navigating complex days and feeling exhaustion. So I'll read this and then hold silence for a minute. When I ring the bell, I'll invite your stories and reflections in response. When the rhythm of the heart becomes hectic, time takes on the strain until it breaks. Then all the unattended stress falls in on the mind like an endless increasing weight. The light in the mind becomes dim. Things you could take in your stride before now become laborsome events of will. Weariness invades your spirit. Gravity begins to fall inside of you, dragging down every bone. The tide you never valued has gone out, and you are marooned on unsure ground. Something within you has closed down, and you cannot push yourself back to life. You've been forced to enter empty time. The desire that drove you has relinquished. There's nothing else to do now but rest and patiently learn to receive the self you have forsaken in the race of days. At first, your thinking will darken and sadness will take over like a listless weather. The flow of unwept tears will frighten you. You have traveled too fast over false ground. Now your soul has come to take you back. Take refuge in your senses. Open up to the small miracles you rushed through. Become inclined to watch the way of rain when it falls slow and free. Imitate the habit of twilight, taking time to open the well of color that fostered the brightness of day. Draw alongside the silence of stone until its calmness can claim you. Be excessively gentle with yourself. Stay clear of those vexed in spirit. Learn to linger around someone of ease who feels that they have all the time in the world. Gradually, you will return to yourself, having learned a new respect for your heart and the joy that dwells far within slow time.